John Cole Scott, Chief Investment Officer at Closed End Fund Advisors, is here. And it's time for us to talk closed end funds today in the Money Life Market Call. Welcome to the Market Call, everybody. This is the part of the show where we talk with experienced money managers about how they do their job, what they look for, what are the characteristics that make them say, here's what I want to buy, and what are the traits that make them say, time to maybe get away from something. Today, my guest, John Cole Scott, he is Chief Investment Officer at Closed End Fund Advisors. And if you are not familiar with the firm, CEFAdvisors.com, also they run the site CEFData.com. And it's important that you know that because, well, if he doesn't discuss your favorite closed-end funds when he's talking either before or, say, after hold it or fold it, you can go to his website and armed with information and the ticker symbols that you like, you can get their data on how they feel about your favorite closed-end funds. He's on Twitter at John Cole Scott, but right now he is here. John Cole Scott, welcome back to Money Life.
Great to be here, Chuck.
We always start with methodology, and it's particularly important in closed-end funds because I've had a number of members of my audience say they like what they hear about closed-end funds, but they're never quite sure they know enough to buy or to sell. So explain what they need to know and what you know that leads to buys and sells.
So remember, with closed-end funds, you're actually buying the common stock of a fund that the manager's buying stocks or bonds underlying that asset value, but you're not buying the net asset value. You're buying the market price. And closed-end funds historically trade at small discounts on average, that there are some premiums and there are some deep discounts, which means the market price is either significantly above net asset value or significantly below net asset value. And a lot of people just start with their analysis of only the yield figure they see or only a deep discount, when we find it's really important to remember that its asset allocation is really important, and then thinking about other data points like, is the after-tax yield appropriate for your taxable account? Like, are you putting the wrong stuff in the wrong bucket? We see that a lot for individuals. And then we also see a lot of people that may not understand their duration exposure with closed-end funds, because a lot of the bond funds employ leverage, which means they buy like $1.30 of bonds from every dollar they have, and that basically makes the duration 30% higher than if you didn't have that exposure. And you can't forget about your sensitivity to interest rates. As you can imagine, that really drives some of the direction of the portfolios. And then we realize that everything has some sort of reactiveness to the S&P 500, very little to zero for muni bond funds, very high for U.S. equity funds. So remembering your beta exposure helps you understand the relative volatility. And then, because it's not the most important thing, but important for a portfolio that's diversified, we really also focus on correlation as a component of how connected things are historically to help build diversification.
So how do people avoid the obvious trap here, which is I'm looking too much at the discount or I'm focusing too much on the yield, where oftentimes the funds that you dislike are funds that have those kind of sparkles or surface things that are very attractive until you dig in and you get deeper?
So there's a very simple data point that anybody can run, but we've been running it since we launched our own data business in 2012, and even had our previous data vendor use it in 2008, is leverage adjusted net asset value yield. So we take the dividend policy of any fund and we say, okay, we divide that into the net asset value. But if the portfolio is 25% levered, we divide that by 1.25 to kind of normalize out the leverage that's being used by the manager. So really, the question we're trying to answer is the dividend policy is set by the board of directors, and the manager has to take the capital and meet that policy with the investment guts. So what is the hurdle rate he has to hit with his capital to hit the policy set by the board, and then how realistic is that? So if you're in a preferred equity fund and you need, an 8% hurdle rate, I don't know how many preferreds can do 8% over time. This is a random example. If you're in a muni bond fund and you're at a 5% rate, that's probably hard to hit in the current environment. But if you're at a 3% rate, or 3.5%, that's probably more normal. So it's not the most important factor, but it's a great, quick check of how realistic the policy is to the sector if you have some sort of perspective on that sector.
In terms of where closed-end funds are today, you know, this is, they were very popular back in the early days of funds, and today they're kind of the forgotten asset class. Not to you, obviously, this is what you do, but how much would you encourage folks who have never gotten into closed-end funds to use them as a diversifier? I mean, you were talking about building portfolios with correlation. Well, it's not that they're not correlated to other assets, but there are some things that you can do, and especially with certain types of assets like preferred stocks and things along those lines, that you really can't do well with traditional funds. So how important would it be for you to say, you know, hey, if you've got a portfolio and you don't have any closed-end funds, you're missing out on opportunities?
I always say the best use of the closed-end fund wrapper is with tactical use of cheap leverage and illiquid investments. So think senior loans, think, you know, and then where the active analyst and manager adds value. So think of, you know, REIT and real estate, and think, you know, preferred equity, and think, you know, the business development company sector, which is a closed-end fund structure, but definitely a little hairier and more complex. You know, you can't do that in an ETF or open-end fund. It is the only access point. So that's some of the best places to where you typically need the nuance versus you want to be above average, not a C student. You know, there, U.S. equity markets, there's some funds we like in that area, but there's also some very competitive open-end funds and ETFs. There's some frosting things we like with closed-end funds, but the best use is the other areas where you've got the illiquid guts and the active management and cheap leverage.
How do closed-end funds typically respond, or do they respond at all differently when you consider the economy? I mean, you know, it's a big picture that people have a tough enough time figuring out, but is there any advantage or disadvantage to closed-end funds when you're looking at economic conditions and the uncertainty we've seen?
I would say the main thing is that the common stock are traded by generally retail investors. You know, they're not really easy for institutions. There's only like four or five that have over $1 billion of exposure in closed-end funds. And so, like, in the fourth quarter, we did some analysis. The discount widening was as bad as it was 10 years ago in the financial crisis, where people were selling everything. You know, Christmas Eve, closed-end funds were trading muni bond funds at 14, 15, 16, 17 discounts. High-yield bond funds at 15, no, mid-teens to almost 20% discounts for funds that were normally 10 points higher. Now, we've actually had a great quarter for closed-end funds. First quarter ended about 15.9% total return for the average closed-end fund, when at asset value, which is the manager's guts, we're only up 11. So that's about 4 points of discount narrowing in the first quarter. But historically, they're still average priced. Like, if you look at the 1 year, 3 year, 5 year average discounts, we're right within spitting distance of that level. So it's very fair to say closed-end funds are not expensive or cheap right now, and they are more volatile because of the trading of the funds by retail investors, to where people will panic sell and people will greedy buy at interesting times, which gives people like us work to do.
So who's the poster child for the methodology? Help introduce my audience to a closed-end fund or two that you particularly like right now.
I mean, one of the funds that we really think is solid and is GHY. GHY is a high-yield bond fund. It's basically a great story. It's at a wide discount because it's harder for activists to attack, but it's a short-duration bond fund at a 3 duration, and its discount is still 13 and change, had a dividend increase, but is still yielding about 8 mid change, which is a solid yield with a solid discount. And you just have to expect it not to trade as tight as funds that could be killed or that are exciting. But Prudential is a great manager in the space. Non-closed fund investors probably know they're a good manager, but because of this nuance, you're getting, I think, a cheap price of a solid manager.
Yeah, it's the GHY, is the PGIM for Prudential Global Investment Management, Global High Yield Fund, and that's the GHY. What else stands out to you right now?
Well, I really think of the real assets, because right now we're worried there is a chance of a recession, but there always is. So we're trying to think of things with contractual or income, because it helps you get through rough spots. So there's JRI, which is the Nuveen Real Asset and Income Fund. Again, it's another relatively wide discount, 13 and mid-change. Its distribution yield is 7.9, so again, significant but not ridiculous. And it's a great way to get tactical exposure to real assets, which is an area that a lot of investors that are traditionally in ETFs and open-end funds may not have as much exposure of. But again, that's blended real estate, but other things, contractual income, which we find a very useful with obviously a manager that is the largest closing fund sponsor and a discount that feels attractive historically.
That's the JRI. Now, interesting to me, the last time I checked the JRI, and I haven't looked recently, I know that, it was slightly leveraged. Not a lot of leverage, but slightly leveraged. How do you feel about leverage? How much should people be worrying about leverage in closing?
It is 30% levered, but again, I would say that if you lever contractual income, as long as your borrowing costs are less than the cash flow, there's a spread there. So that leverage will change over time, but normal equity leverage is 25%. Normal bond leverage for taxables is 30, for munis is closer to 40, for BDCs is closer to 45. And so that's just normal. So it's kind of like waking up and, you know, it's the neighborhood you live in. And so it's what's normal. But it needs to be, you know, thought of when you think of that's how come the yields can be higher. There's generally leverage and generally discounts. So where the average closing fund portfolio right now, you basically for one market dollar, you control about $1.40 of manager assets, mostly leverage, but a little bit discount.
Now we're going to find out how you feel about some closed-end funds that my audience is particularly interested in.
Play Hold It.
You got to know when to hold up.
Or fold it.
Know when to fold up.
It's Hold It or Fold It time with my guest, John Cole Scott. He is the head of Closed End Fund Advisors. If you want more information, cefadvisors.com, cefdata.com, and John Cole Scott is on Twitter at John Cole Scott. Hold It or Fold It's where we put our guests to your test. We're going to jump right in, and we were talking about a Nuveen fund before we played the music, so let's stick with that. A request we got from Chris in Rochester. He wants to know about the Nuveen New York Dividend Advantage Muni Fund. That's NAN.
And again, Nuveen obviously knows this sector well, and I understand that taxes kind of suck in New York State. I have a lot of clients and friends there. The challenge is when we look at the difference of the indicated yield of NAN around 4.3, you know, there's another national fund that has no AMT exposure, that's NVG, that yields 5.2. And even if you're in the highest New York brackets, to me, you're getting a more diversified, higher after-tax yield. And so to me, when you think about a closed-end fund of 4.3 yield, even if it's double tax-free or triple tax-free in New York City, the challenge is you can also buy muni bonds directly for 4-ish. And there's not enough extra juice to justify the expenses and the liquidity and the volatility that you could have with that fund.
So NAN, the Nuveen New York Dividend Advantage Muni Fund, no advantage there.
Oh boy, that sounded bad.
That was a fold. But in there, it did sound like NVG, the Nuveen AMT-free Muni Credit closed-end fund, was a buy.
Yes, sir.
Would you mind stepping aside? I've got a purchase to make.
Our next two requests come from Malcolm in Eugene, Oregon. His first is for JH Preferred Income. It's ticker symbol HPI.
HPI trades at one of the highest premiums in its space. The John Hancock funds generally do as a group. So currently it's around a 7 and change premium. That's just extra gravity on the downside that I don't see any advantage to. The yield is fine at 7.4, but there's another manager very solid in the space, Flyerly and Crumrine, that have their fund FLC that trades at a 4 discount and yields 7 and mid-change. And to me, it's a great, good manager at a better entry point that is an easy swap trade.
So HPI, the John Hancock Preferred Income Fund.
Put that one on the psycho list.
Yeah, and then instead, the FLC.
Come on, let's buy.
Malcolm's other request is for the Allianz Global Investors Diversified Income and Convertible Fund, ACV.
So ACV trades at a small discount, which is fine, but this is normal closing fund behavior. If you're a contrarian investor, step into deeper discounts. It yields 8.9, which again is very good in that space. There's a peer fund run by Advent Claymore, and it's AVK. So it's 10% wider discount and a slightly higher yield, so 9 and mid-change versus 8 and high-change, and you've got more discount potential upside. Here's the interesting thing about discounts. If they never go away, it's free leverage.
Right, but at some point you're hoping maybe they will go away and you'll be able to take
that
profit.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, unfortunately, Malcolm in Eugene, Oregon, you may need to send us some more requests. You haven't sent us much except for closed-end funds, and for you...
Oh! It just gets worse and worse!
Yeah, that was a fold, again, on the Allianz Global Investors Diversified Income and Convertible Fund, ACV. In there, however, was a purchase recommendation on the AVK, the Advent Claymore Convertible and Income Fund.
Either gets on board or he gets left behind.
Our last two requests today come from Rich in Orchard Beach, Maryland. He shares the first one with Maynard in Phoenix. It's ClearBridge Energy MLP Opportunities, EMO.
So this is a fund in a sector that's actually, you know, the whole sector's had a rough five-year period, and this fund had a dividend cut that wasn't totally unexpected, but definitely nobody enjoyed. So right now, at a 12 and change discount, it's still yielding 9 and mid-change in a very tax-advantaged way. And so to me, it's a solid manager. It pissed people off. It's bruised, not broken. It's a very easy way to play that, buying something that has pissed off investors, which is a good closing fund approach.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Yeah, going after the angry vote. It's the ClearBridge Energy MLP Opportunities Fund, EMO. And last, again for Rich in Orchard Beach, it's the BlackRock Multi-Sector Income Fund, BIT.
BIT is kind of a non-sexy multi-sector bond fund, almost a 10 discount, yielding 8 and mid-change, a duration of 3. It's, you know, BlackRock says some of their better ideas go in there. It's not as sexy and hedging as the PIMCO multi-sector bond funds, but again, you're getting 90 cent dollars and still active manager in the space. So we're a big fan because you're not paying any extra premium for the PIMCO name or the PIMCO swap, you know, swapping and hedging ability.
So we finished strong with two buys, because that was a buy on the BlackRock Multi-Sector Income Fund, BIT.
Bye, bye, bye. Is that all you can think about?
Yep. All I can think about right now is goodbyes, as in John Cole Scott. Goodbye, but thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Chuck.
That's John Cole Scott, everybody. He is the Chief Investment Officer at Closed End Fund Advisors. Go to cefadvisors.com or take your list of closed end funds and the data that you want to get and go to cefdata.com. Don't forget to follow him on Twitter. He is at John Cole Scott. We'll be back to wrap up today's show and let you know what's coming tomorrow and the rest of the week right after this message. We'll be right back.